Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters, as you know, are for anybody for any reason at any time you choose to express a positive thought, stamp it and mail it, and make somebody else's life richer. Today's guest is Mark Povinelli, who is an actor that if we had a TV moment here, you would know, but he'll talk soon, so you'll know. And I'm just going to go to you, and let's just talk about some aspect of your work. When did you first, what was your first acting job?
My first professional acting job or my first time I was on stage?
First
time I was on stage in front of people was the second grade talent show at the St. Bernadette Catholic School in Silver Spring, Maryland. Mm-hmm. My mom dressed me up as Shirley Temple, and I sang on the Good Ship Lollipop.
Oh, so with dark hair at all?
No, I had a wig and a dress and a lollipop. And I haven't gone to therapy yet.
And wait, so how did that work?
It was great. It was a huge hit.
Nice.
I mean, you got this tiny
kid. But you could sing and dance.
Well, I don't know that was the main draw. I think it was seeing a 7-year-old in drag with a giant lollipop.
But you liked it. You're all grinning.
Well, I mean, it was... okay, I've said this before, but for your audience, mm-hmm. I'm a little person. I'm at 3'9", 3'10". And going through life... I realized at a fairly early age that I was on stage all the time. Like, I would go out of my house.
Oh, because people would be
so
looking at you.
Profoundly different.
Uh-huh.
And I would be going about in my normal activities like any kid, but I would get a lot of attention. And
good attention or not necessarily?
Both.
Uh-huh.
It was always, there was a fascination, a spectacle, an awareness of me that you couldn't be completely anonymous. In a store, going out.
You're also a very good-looking man, which must have had some...
Well, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and now that some people recognize me from my work,
mm-hmm.
it's really awkward because people will be staring at me, and I'm so conditioned to have them stare at me because of my size.
Oh,
and so, some days you want to be nice, and some days you're not that interested in educating the world and having people look at you, and you just kind of give them a rude look or you say something. And then... you find out that they know you because of...
And it was a positive.
Yes, because of television. And so then you have to backtrack really quickly. But I learned...
That's such an odd relationship because the people who are the actors, they're in our homes, they're in our living rooms, they're in our bedrooms, they're part of our lives, and we're not part of yours.
No.
It's unequal.
And it's... I'm guilty of it, too. I remember I met Bob Costas one time, 20 years ago or something, and I... went up to him, and I was like, hey, Bob, how's it going? As if, because he was in my living room all the time, big sports fan. He was always there, so I thought we were friends.
Right.
And he just looked at me like, like I look at people if they recognize me. And,
okay, well, go ahead. So you were talking about being young when...
So I realized that the first time or one of the first few times I got on stage, I had that moment occur to me where I am now in control of you looking at me.
Oh, nice.
And I'm in control of when you laugh and when you cry and when you, and that was a really empowering thing for me.
Yes. How interesting. I never even thought of that.
At a very young age, I knew that this is what I wanted to do and I had a passion for it, and it's been quite a bizarre trip, but I'm still doing it.
Well, let's talk about bizarre, but I have a question. You were talking about when you were a child. So children are children. I mean, at what point do you realize you're a little person?
Well, I think my parents did a real good – my whole family is average size.
Mm-hmm.
Most little people are born – it's a random genetic occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have it, it's depending on what type of dwarfism
you're
you
dominant.
Have, then it's dominant.
Right.
But my parents are both average size. There's no history of dwarfism in my family. When I was born, I'm the youngest of four, and my siblings are all, quote unquote, average, normal, healthy, whatever.
Isn't that a wonderful word?
we call them average height because it's not that interesting. You're just average.
Thanks.
And they did a really great job of letting me know that there is a difference.
Oh, nice.
But the difference wasn't supposed to be something that defined my future,
It's a feature.
It is, and it's profound. I mean, I'm not going to diminish it's no pun intended, but it's it definitely affects a great swath of my life.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
You talk. I mean, you started to say it was a bizarre journey.
Well, I mean, the bizarre part, I think no actor has a standard path. There's no such thing as, well, I started in the mailroom and then I worked my way up, and every 3 years I got a raise and right. a promotion, and an actor's path is crazy, and every single one is different, and everybody has a different process, and some people know exactly what they're doing, and some people just wing it, and they're as great as, you know, the person who studied for 20 years.
Oh, sure.
But being in such a unique type in a business where your physicality is a massive feature of what
why
you do
chosen.
And why you're chosen, yeah. I have found myself to play... I mean, I get stereotyped in the sense that I do a lot more fantastical characters than probably your average actor.
Well, like what would that be?
Like the leprechauns, alien,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
whatever. But I have been fortunate in the sense that I've not been cast as I'm always the lawyer, or I'm always the bad guy,
yes,
or I'm always, you know, I play the same part on every TV show that you see.
Good point, because there is that character actor typecast.
Right. And they can do great, you know, they can have great careers, but they're always in a suit and they're always sitting behind a desk.
Now, does that bother them, do you think?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're happy to have work, because we all are.
Right.
But everybody wants to, I think, every
explore
actor wants to explore
and,
everything.
Sure,
and
sure.
That has been one crazy feature, is that I have been able to do a really bizarrely wide range of
work. But that may also, I'm guessing, be a reflection of your wide range of talent. And your being available, I mean, how does that...
I hope so.
You don't have... So that makes you a real actor, that you can do different things.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, that I think that holds true a little bit more in theater, in stage, than it does in film and television.
Which way?
Is that you can kind of bust out of your... Your essence in a little bit. I mean, I don't want to... say that theater actors don't give truthful performances by any means. But on film, it's a bit tougher to fake things.
Because close up.
Right.
And
at least I've realized that, you know, I am who I am. And I think I have a pretty good sense of who that is. And when I try to play characters that just aren't me, they're interesting to try to tackle. But there's I mean, unless I really have a lot of time to work on it, but you're auditioning, you get the script in 24 hours, you're performing it, and, you know, there's a lot of faking going on.
Sure.
And so I've realized that, you know, you can't do everything. Not every part, not every actor can play every part, and I'm okay with that.
Right, that makes sense.
But every actor thinks they can play every part.
Okay. Now, so what do you like to do best?
Theater.
Like, oh really?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
So with all you've just said, you do like that still?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't...
Do you do a lot of that here?
I haven't done it that much here. I did it a lot when I was younger, when I lived in Minneapolis after college, and I did solely theater there for like 6 years, and then started to do some work in New York and have done a few plays out here.
How did you... That's what... When I asked you what your first job, and you said, you know, paid, or... So what was your first professional pay job, and how'd you get it?
My first professional, I think, was after I graduated from college. There was a little... my parents lived in Cleveland at the time, and I went to school in Southern Ohio at Miami of Ohio. And there was a small children's theater in Akron, and they were doing a production of Rumpelstiltskin. And I was Rumpelstiltskin.
Perfect, yeah.
And
so they couldn't resist that.
I think that might have been my first paycheck. So
in the main, would you say that having a visible difference has helped? Because when people want that role, that there aren't a million people going for it?
There's no doubt that there are big advantages and disadvantages. I mean, I think the disadvantages
are
pretty clear. I mean, the disadvantage being that you don't get opportunities to audition for a lot of stuff. I mean, my manager always complains that with the resume I have, I should be able to get into any door. And people just won't see me. They will not see me for something out of the box, out of the typecast of...
And just because of height.
Yeah. They can't, you know,
so
it's a lawyer. And I'm pretty much... I would have been a lawyer if I weren't an actor. I mean, that's something that I could do.
So obviously what you need is some casting person who's got some real intelligence
Right.
Uh-huh.
And casting directors are in a tough spot because they're beholden to the directors and the producers. They have to get hired by them. And if they, quote-unquote, waste their time, meaning the producer's time, by bringing in every Tom, Dick, and Harry that they think would be interesting, and the producer isn't interested in that, they're not going to get a job again.
But you happen to have that forceful kind of a personality. I could see you as a lawyer, as a trial lawyer.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of opening the eyes to, I know a lot of little people that have real jobs. It's not a stretch.
Right.
But
could be a lawyer, of course.
Yeah. But in our world, yes. You know, we get seen as what the media wants us to be seen as.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So there needs to be a reason that the little person is in this role, because they're really mad at the world because they're small, or they're really sad and the hero needs to save them, or...
That still doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, because, I mean, but it's, you're one-dimensional most often.
So what are the advantages?
Now, on the other hand, the advantages are kind of what you alluded to, that when I came out here, I didn't know anyone, and got into rooms that I wouldn't ordinarily, somebody with my pedigree wouldn't get anywhere near, because they were like, hey, I need a little person for this episode of Dharma and Greg.
And is it that needs one to you be, did?
That was my first guest starring role on a television show. And I played Greg's college roommate, who was a lawyer, as a matter of fact. And so they, you know, I didn't have any credits, basically. I had theater credits, but no film television credits to really speak of. And they saw me, and, you know, it worked out, but I wouldn't have been seen.
But in that role, was there any reference or necessity that you are a little person?
Of course.
Oh, there was
still.
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
I see.
The
so
whole
was
episode
still...
was about Dharma, who was the, you know, flower child, ultra PC person. She kept stumbling over her words when I came over and kept, like, making a bunch of short puns.
Oh, you know, there was a Mary Tyler Moore episode like that.
I'm sure.
And the first one was funny, and it got tiresome so quickly.
It was, I mean,
it was a very good looking actor. I forget his name.
There's sort of like, I mean, I've seen that script over and over. You sort of see the same. You're like, oh, that's that one. Oh, that's the little person being mistaken for a kid. Oh, I've seen that one. And I've done that one. I've seen Peter Dinklage do it on 30 Rock. I did it on Modern Family. And it just kind of depends on how well they write it.
Yes.
And luckily, the writers on Modern Family are really good. And I was like, that's actually funny.
On the other hand, you know, being a TV fan as I am, most everything is repetitive.
Sure.
The first doctor show saw, you know, 30 doctors. I mean, people are afraid to try something new. They want to do what already sold last year.
We just saw a promo the other night for some NBC show, and my wife said, is that ER? Because it looked exactly like ER 25 years ago.
And the reality shows.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many of those can you take?
And it's a cookie-cutter formula, and you just stick in different types. Yeah.
But that's wonderful that you are getting work, though.
I am.
Any actor, that's a blessing, yes.
I mean, knock on marble that we're sitting on, but it's been, I haven't had another job since like 97.
Oh, you haven't had to supplement with another job. That's wonderful.
Right.
And you deserve it. I mean, that's great.
I love doing it.
How did you meet your wife?
We met through an organization called Little People of America, and it's about 7,000 members all over the country, and we have a national conference every year. And I met her a billion years ago at a conference in, like, Des Moines. And I met her. She met me 2 years later at a different conference. She has no recollection of meeting me.
So what did you notice when you saw her?
Well, I thought she was beautiful and had this light about her that – and I am not this kind of person. I mean, I guess I am because I'm about to reveal it, but – I'm not overly sentimental, and I don't sort of give my emotions that easily. And maybe the second or third conference – so we'd go to these conferences quite really young. I mean, I was 19, 20, whatever, when we met.
Oh, so the conferences you went to were your choice to go. It's not like summer camp for kids or something.
They're like this frat party, basically. Yeah. I mean, now they've become, it's grown, and it's a wonderful organization. I'm very involved in it, but with advocacy and education and awareness and all of these elements. But back then, it was mostly a social organization. Mm-hmm. It was a chance to get together and bond with people who had similar experiences. Right. I mean, I didn't know any. There were no little people in my neighborhood and my school. And so you get together, and you suddenly meet somebody, and you're like, wow, you're just like
something.
Me.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is you go to these, and I had formed so much of my identity based on my size, go to high school and you use it. And you use your size to your advantage as best you can. I mean, you have two choices. You either own it and use it, or you end up loathing it your whole life and fight against it and deny it. And I thought that wasn't a very fun path. So I would use it, but it was definitely part of my persona and my sort of like fun loving and I'm the little guy and blah. Well, you go to a conference, and that's
taken. I like the way you said that. I'm the little guy in blah.
And right, because you've realized that it doesn't take you that far, especially when you go to a conference, and everybody else there has that thing, and so that gets taken away from you as your like sort of trick.
Oh,
and now you have to rely on actually who you are, as opposed
to. So was that tricky, or was that
it was
a huge
really
release?
No, it's terrifying.
Well,
it's like I have to find out now who I am outside of my size. And that was, I mean, it is a very, very common experience
to go
into these conferences for your first time, walk in a room, see 200 people
I'm not special in the way I thought I was.
Look like you and turn around and walk right back out because you're terrified. Suddenly you're not special.
Yes.
You're just some person.
Yes.
And you have to be, I mean, there's also
And there's
that,
a plus and a minus in that.
There is.
Oh my goodness, I never even thought of such a thing.
Right. So anyway, one morning, a group of our friends, we were all having breakfast, and I looked up from my pancakes, and I saw Heather, and I mean, we had been friends, and something in my head went, you're going to marry this person.
Oh,
and again,
no.
It sounds so corny.
No, it sounds perfect.
And I was like, no, that's terrible. Wait, I'm way too young to be saying something like that.
And you were 19 then?
I think so, something like that. And so I fought it for a year. I mean, we started dating a couple years later.
But where did she live? You were far apart?
She lived in Santa Barbara. I lived in Ohio, I guess, at the time. Or maybe.
So that's not exactly, I'll pick you up at 8 o'clock.
Exactly, right. And, okay. I mean, that was fine because we were young enough that we needed that sort of slow. I mean, I presumably would have worked out if we lived next door to each other because it's worked out.
Yeah.
But that was I think that worked. And
how old were you when you did get married?
Well, I was living in Minneapolis and then she went to grad school in Minneapolis. So then we started like actually really dating and we got married when I was 27.
Oh, so you did wait till
We had like six years of.
What did she do? What was her grad school in?
It was an adult education, but now she's a teacher, a second grade school teacher.
Nice.
Yeah.
And your children?
11 and 7, Keaton and Piper, and they're great. They keep. I mean, that's my job. Acting is like my. That's not, I mean, when I get an acting job, it's fun and it's vacation and it's, I get to go do this and I hang out with adults and get to play and do all this stuff. And my real job is taking care of my kids, basically, because when I'm not working, I'm home and get them ready for school and do all that stuff. And
now, I did read. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the most important thing you can do is put some more healthy individuals into this world, right?
Right. I think so.
That's nice. Do they have any desire to act?
I hope not.
Oh, that's what all parents who are actors say, most of them. Yeah.
It's a tough business. And my son doesn't. He's a very... He feels uncomfortable saying he doesn't because he thinks he's going to offend me.
Oh.
And
like,
I really
want to be one. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's just not, it's just not in him.
Nice.
My daughter, possibly, which is terrifying for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can't say no.
Right.
And my parents were very supportive of me.
See, that's the most important thing, really.
They were terrified, I'm sure. Like, what are you, you're going
to
go
you're
off
gonna
and
starve
do,
to death.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
yeah,
that's
and
right.
Why don't you do it as a side activity? You could,
right.
Community theater is a great thing. And,
uh-huh.
And they're right.
Why don't you do it? But that's saying, you know, why don't you do it, but don't take it seriously? And if you don't take it seriously, you can't get where you.
Yeah.
So what I read something interesting about your work in Water for Elephants, was it?
Okay.
And you're talking about what that felt like going in. You don't know anybody when you go onto a set, right? When you're
most often. Right. I mean, maybe you know one of the crew guys that worked with you on something.
But you don't necessarily know the other actors.
Very rarely.
Hello, yeah. And now yes. We're going to be in this intimate kind of relationship.
Right.
And that's got to be strange.
It's extremely strange. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your job. It's mm-hmm. your job. I just did a pilot for Amazon. They have new content mm-hmm. now, like Transparent. And the premise is these four best friends for 20 years go to Belize to visit their fifth friend, who's mm-hmm. now like this millionaire. It turns out he's like some into some drug mm-hmm. nefarious things.
Yeah.
But so these four guys, and they're all great actors, mm-hmm. they like literally got off the plane
and hello.
Said, hello, my name is Michael Imperioli, or Steve Zahn, and then started acting as if they're...
Does that bring you close quickly, or not necessarily?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, that's why... I mean, that's one... Besides the work itself, but one of the best things about this business is you meet such interesting, crazy people, and you get mm-hmm. put in these situations where you just... All your, you know, all the formalities of social construct are pretty quickly tossed out the window. You know, you're kissing somebody or you're...
Oh, I know. I look at that sometimes on screen. I think I could never do that.
Right.
Never. Yes. Well, but people do and can.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just sort of fall into these intense relationships mm-hmm. that seem so magnetic. And then... You get done with the job and you really never talk to these people again.
Yeah, yes.
And it's very bizarre. And it takes a while to get over. I mean, it took me like my first few plays where you're this I mean,
it's a family.
You're a family. I mean, I don't want to compare it to like war or anything, but you do feel like you're in this battalion of this troop and you're all looking out for each other and you're all got each other's backs. And you spend, I mean, if you're out of town, you spend all your time together because you don't know anybody else. And then you go away, and you just never you never see each other again.
So that is one of those, you know, there are two kinds of relationships in a way. They're the core relationships,
uh-huh.
and they're the situational friendships. And one of those goes away when the situation goes away, right?
And I think that is why I worked very hard at having a what people would consider an ordinary real life.
Mm.
You know, I have... A wife, two kids, a dog, cats, a house, a car.
Yes.
I watch TV. You know, I do.
Yes.
I go to the grocery store. I live a very mundane life.
Well, that sounds wonderful because what you've just described is like constant and sporadic abandonment.
Right. Right.
Yes. So you don't.
No, I. The reason I enjoy it so much is because I have that safety net of mm-hmm. coming back home and having.
Knowing where you do belong.
Yes. And that gives me the freedom to go and.
Mm-hmm.
Be
do it
reckless,
again. Yeah.
You know, and do it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know how actors do it. That I don't know how actors are with other actors. I think that would drive me insane.
Oh, to be married. Well, it apparently does. Look at the divorce rate.
Right, right. Know? I mean, it's such a narcissistic business, and you're so insecure, and you're always looking for reinforcement. And your best friend, anybody, if they get a job, you can't help but being going, well, why did you get that? Why didn't I get that?
Well, I have a question or an observation, because you said before, when you were saying it's a narcissistic business, I think you often see that the underlying thread is often a crazed need for applause and approval.
Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. But you said something different, and you look like such a solid fellow, and you said you liked being in charge of who was looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally different.
It is, I guess. I hadn't.
It sounds different.
It is. I mean, there's no doubt. There's nothing like doing a joke on stage and having 300 people laugh at it.
I understand.
And then spending the rest of the run trying to figure out how to get that same laugh.
Right. Because that's, yes, and that's kind of a generosity even, I think, going on stage and letting mm-hmm. yourself be at the mercy of, you know, others. But I think that core difference... That yours wasn't, you know, I need the applause. It's I want to decide who's looking at me and why.
Well, there's definitely an acceptance factor,
sure.
I think. I mean, I think that for me, I see that as a communal experience on stage mm-hmm. where it's myself, the other actors, and the 9 to 500 people in the audience, depending on what kind of show you're doing. And you're all in this together. And it's that chance for me to be like, I can't control that mm-hmm. in real life. Mm-hmm. And again, going back to my size, I'm sure played a tremendous amount in all of this. But when I go out, I can't grab everybody in the grocery
right,
store and go, hey, let's all get together
yes.
and let me explain
who
kind
I
of
am.
Who I am.
Right.
On stage, yeah. even though you're playing a character, at least I've convinced myself that I am somehow explaining who I am to them.
I see. Okay.
And getting some sort of acceptance from mm-hmm. them, you know? So there's definitely that factor, but it isn't, I don't feel like there's a hole in me that
I need somebody to
validate me.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You. I have a question because I'm about love letters.
Mm-hmm.
I read something about how appreciative you were at how easy Reese Witherspoon made this for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? What I'm,
oh yeah.
So, and do you see her anymore? Did you run into her? Is this one of these?
Oh, no. I mean, it's completely a...
Okay, so it occurred to me, what a wonderful... And I don't like being the love letters police, so you can just ignore
right.
me. But it did occur to me that when I read that, I thought, what a wonderful opportunity for a love letter, i.e. a letter of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may remember me, you may not, but I worked with you on this. And I want you to know how much And there's no one who's immune to getting one of those.
Right, right. I love that idea.
Oh,
and I mean, right as you were saying that, it catalogs through my head other people.
Yes.
I mean, Reese was wonderful, and she's very professional, and it set a discipline right away on the set that you, like, okay, you're in charge, and this is how we're going to do things, and this is... I know where I am. I know what's going on.
Fan letters are one of the best forms of love letters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think people don't keep those forever, I'm telling you, you find them on their bedside table once they've passed away.
Right, right.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you like that idea.
I love it.
What about to your kids? And who would, if you were to write one just, and I hadn't said anything, right now, who would it be to?
Boy, that is tricky. And I think...
you live kind of a charmed life.
I do. I mean, I complain about it all the time, but it's fun. I'm very fortunate, and
you carry that with you. You know, that's so clear that you. Yeah.
Well, I should be. There's a lot of tough things in this world.
Do you ever write letters? Did you ever?
I did. Yeah, back in the day. Well, especially with Little People of America, there was. Pre-internet days,
right.
And we all would go our separate ways, and a phone call would cost you $12
yes,
or whatever
right,
every time
yes.
you picked up the phone. So we wrote letters all the time
oh,
back
nice.
And forth.
Okay, so you lived through an era where that was it.
I do.
Do
I have
you
a,
have any of
I have a duffel bag full of letters
okay.
in my garage.
So good enough.
Yeah, I do. That's... But that doesn't mean that, I mean, a couple people come to mind, and that is then I get to college, and I end up meeting a group of guys that were in the theater, and we all lived together. And again, like I needed that to validate, like, it's okay that you're doing this. You know, this is a big risk. And I put all my energy in college in the theater.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't know that.
So it was sort of, I mean, when I graduated, I could have gone and done other things, but I would have been miserable. And it was sort of like, at that point, I did throw my eggs into a basket and go, this is what I want to do. And it was these guys that are still friends of mine today that gave me
courage.
Just the courage to do it and see the failings and the successes.
So a note to them.
Right.
On this stage, you know.
Right. And they're not all of them are in the business anymore, or they're certainly not doing what people would prototypically think of as, like, you're a professional actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so if I carry on the torch of having the career that we all talked about 25 years ago, a large part of that is because of them.
Okay, so what a wonderful thing.
It would
be. I've just taken a minute here to remember
yeah.
what you did for me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe I got a letter like that once from somebody who said, you don't know the effect you had on my life and the direction you put me. Well, sure enough, I didn't.
Right.
This is somebody I knew to say hello to, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could pick her out of a lineup today.
Right.
And it was just stunning. Those letters are such... Oh, I hope you do it.
Well, I mean...
And by the way, the letters that you have,
right.
long after you're gone, and your children find that duffel
That's
bag.
That's going to be hilarious.
It's going to be, I think, more than that.
Right.
They're going to know what a legacy of love and elegance they came from.
Mm-hmm.
One more facet of it.
Right.
I think.
Well, he's still my best friend today, but my Dan Rooney, my college buddy, he graduated 2 years before I did, and he was living in Minneapolis. And when I graduated from college, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I was going to take a job in an advertising company in Cleveland. And he said, "What are you doing? Move up to Minneapolis. You can live with me. Try it for 6 months. It's a great theater town. Give it a shot. And if it doesn't work out, you can move back home."
Oh, love, and I was like, "Love, Mark.
Yeah.
There's your letter."
Right.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you do them, because also you're part of an interesting and significant part of the world, which, you know, that cultural aspect. And whatever trail you leave in your own handwriting is going to be just delicious to somebody who gets it, but also in 40 years when it's found. And, you know, it's just one more way to leave a trail of your history.
And certainly in this age, that doesn't happen anymore.
No, well, it, you know, people say, oh, the lost art of letter writing. I hear that a lot.
Right.
Truth is, it's not a lost art. It's as much an art as it ever was, and I'm going to end up on this note. It is as much an art as it ever was. It's just in the hands of fewer of us.
Mm-hmm.
Really. Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
Oh, my goodness. I had a very good time with you.
Likewise.
So this is Janet Gallen saying, until next time, goodbye from me and
Mark Povinelli.
Thank you, dear. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion. Bye.